72 degrees outside KSCO Studios. Up next, it's hour number one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Why do we never get an answer?
Hey, folks, welcome to the Dr. Future Show. Where are we this week, Mrs. Future?
We have continued our stay in Canada, but we're in a brand new place, and it's called Mad Scientist Island in the middle of Lake de Saziel.
Yes, we just got off the submarine here.
And yes, and I'll tell you, I was up at just before dawn this morning, and we are surrounded by mist. I dived into the water, and it was like jumping into a cloud. It was really great.
Yes, and you hear the loons out on the lake, which are really quite haunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe for any luck, you might hear some in the background as we do our show today.
Yeah, so we're studying deep nature, and we're, of course, bringing this broadcast to you live from Mad Scientist Island. Yeah. You'll be able to call in when we give you the phone number at 831-479-1080.
You gave that the phone number.
I gave out the phone number because I know you have some really great headlines, and people are going to have a lot to say about them.
Yes.
So,
by the way, we do have a shot of us sitting in our little transmission tent.
Yes, yes. We thought you'd like to see the live setup here, what Dr. and Mrs. Future do when we're traveling. So if you go to our website at drfutureshow.com,
DR Future,
then you will see a picture that we just shot right before the show went live. Meanwhile, talking about live, boy, there's some pretty alive headlines you got here on drfutureshow.com on the links page.
I know,
where are
right?
you going to dive in here, Dr. Future?
Well, we're all familiar with GPS, right?
GPS, oh yes, indispensable, especially when you're traveling.
Yeah, we're using it, use it every day in the car.
When you don't know where you're going.
Find friends on iPhone.
GPS can find you.
Yeah. Well, what's very interesting is that a National Geographic reporter, a guy named Brian Christie, commissioned two fake elephant tusks. He embedded them with GPS, and he planted them to track ivory smuggling routes.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Okay, so what did he find
out? He was
out?
Interested in that because, you know, as with blood diamonds, ivory is used by armed groups to buy medicine and weapons.
It trades like currency in Sudan, right, huh? That's like the rare ivory tusks of the elephants there.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's valuable stuff.
Mm-hmm. So there's a map.
Yeah, they have a little map that shows you how it works. The smuggling route, ivory's smuggling route. It looks like they hand carry them through the jungle and then they drive them into Sudan where the ivory is stored, and that's where the GPS units stopped transmitting.
So where did this journey begin? Did it begin in Sudan or did it end in Sudan?
And the beginning is Central African Republic.
See.
Yeah.
Wow.
I suspect it depends on which elephant poachers you're tracking.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's an interesting little map, and it sort of opens the door to how GPS could be used for all kinds of things.
Wow.
You know,
all
in
right.
science, it's in nature, it's used for tracking bird migration, things like that. This is tracking smuggling routes.
Wow. So this is a little teaser that's put out in advance of the National Geographic cover story for September, which is going to be Warlords of Ivory. So you can have a little sneak peek preview of the ivory routes discovered by illicit GPS tracking. So
yeah.
See, you can make this spy technology work for us, not just against us.
Exactly.
Right?
It's where you put your attention.
That's right. And as we've been having a lot of conversations this week, you know, ethics and morality are in the hands of the people using the tools. So you can't blame the tools. You have to really reform and improve human nature, same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was.
You want a world
yeah.
that works for everybody. The ethics have to be a priority for all of the people. Okay.
Absolutely.
Anyway, that was a quickie. What else you got for us?
Well, you know how you can take videos? You ever you shoot videos with a camcorder? the camcorder?
You're acting like you don't know. Do like, I ever like shoot I know, video, right? Del?
I'm talking figuratively to the audience, okay, Mrs. Future?
Oh, I see. Yeah. He's talking to you guys.
Yes.
He's not talking
Dear
to
Rune,
me.
You know what it's like to shoot videos? Well, you know what a pain in the butt it is to edit? Not that I... Like me, I love editing, okay? Editing is great fun. It's like writing, you know? There's a certain pleasure to the craft of creating with the tools.
And yet, I will remind you of our very first date, Dr. Future, when you were expounding on the benefits of in-camera editing, which is editing didn't require any extra time after the movie was shot. It was real-time editing where you would just plan the next shot based on the last shot, and you would try and have a...
Yeah, thank you, Mrs. Future. That's the idea, is that it is a holy grail of video to shoot the perfect movie without editing. You know, where it just comes out of the camera and you actually have something really cool. Well, in pursuit of that holy grail, there is a story of a new company that is trying to do this.
Okay.
It's a competitor to GoPro. It's a company called Grava, G-R-A-A-V-A. They're putting out a little action camera that uses kind of AI for editing. Now, how does it work, you might ask?
How does it work? I'm asking.
Okay, well, it utilizes data from the camera, the microphone, accelerometer, which all of our smartphones have now, the GPS, of course, and interestingly, your heart rate.
What?
Your heart rate, yeah.
It's using your heart rate to edit videos?
Yes.
That's really interesting.
Yes, so you might wonder how that works.
I do wonder how that works. I mean, do you have to strap this camera onto your wrist or something? I mean, how does it even measure your heart rate?
That's a good question. It probably ties into a sensor that it's associated with, because the Apple Watch needs to actually have direct connection with your skin.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't tell you exactly how it does that in this piece.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, they say that they use it for indicating when you get excited about something.
I see. Of course, that's what they want to find out, is when you get excited.
Yeah. When you're shooting something, mm-hmm. like you suddenly see a car accident or a UFO in the sky or a friend that you want to shoot, your heart rate will jump. And so as soon as that happens, it turns on the camera.
That's really interesting. I imagine that it's built into, like, it looks like this camera is a handheld camera.
Yeah, it kind of attaches to, like, the handlebar, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is we're starting to see smarts being placed in the camera for doing better editing. It also will synchronize music to the tracks, to your shot.
Right, it does that kind of stuff like iMovie does.
Yeah, not just to the beat, but you know, to the shot. Yeah, the shot itself, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So it's an attempt at that. It's not out yet. And they're going to be selling it for like $399 when it comes out, which is competitive with the GoPro cameras. It doesn't quite do the 4K video that GoPro does. It does 1080p with 4K slow-mo.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing also about it is that it also will send the video to the cloud and do analysis of the video later, like facial recognition. It'll take your speech and do speech to text, and then that text is searchable for keyword searching for your video.
Wow,
stuff
ambitious.
Like that. Yeah, yeah. It's the whole thing of video as we know it is going to go away,
wow.
and more into a form of media that tells stories directly.
Wow,
it's interesting,
right.
Huh?
Videographer's best friend.
Okay, anyway, I thought I mentioned Grava, G-R-A-A-V-A.
Cool.
And that's in our links page.
Okay, folks, well, listen, it's time for a break. Take it away, Sam, and we'll be back for more with the Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show, broadcasting to you from a remote island in the Quebec Mountains, Laurentian Mountains. Sam, we have a caller on the line. Could that be John Monahan, by any chance?
That's right. It is John Monahan. I'm getting kind of bored
John!
In the hospital. I thought I'd get a call out and
you.
Talk to a couple of geniuses.
John, great to hear from you.
Bless
we
your
miss
heart,
you,
man.
I just love intelligent people.
No.
Well, we love you too.
Definitely.
You being one of them.
It wasn't easy to get this call through, but God bless you for answering.
Yeah, no problem. So tell us, you know, for those who know John has been our Santa Cruz artist.
Yeah,
almost
he's
famous
been our
artist.
Favorite sidekick for a long time. And then he's been in the hospital for a while.
Yeah.
And we haven't really gotten much. So give us an update, John. How are you?
What happened and how are you doing?
Well, speaking of help, I think that people should see their doctors regularly. I failed to do that. And I had a burst ulcer in my spleen. And I had this Dr. Waddell save my life. He opened up my whole chest and cleaned up the nasty stuff in there, and he saved my life.
Wow.
Thank you, Dr. Waddell. Bless your heart, John. You sound good.
He's one of the best surgeons around. So I'm in bed in the hospital, but I thought it would be very exciting to talk to you guys from a long distance. You're on some kind of island?
Yeah, we're in Mad Scientist Island out in Lake de Saisil in Laurentian Mountains outside of Montreal.
Yeah, you know, Al is from Montreal.
Oh, it's an international phone call. Yay.
Yeah, definitely. B-Link.
Just shows you how connected we are wherever we are.
Yeah. Well, that's right. We're all three connected right now, and it's a real treasure to do it.
Yeah, a treasure to talk to you. John, when we see your smiling face, you'll be out of the hospital anytime soon?
Well, as soon as possible. I might need a wheelchair. I'm not sure, but I want to get back in the world. Almost impossible for me to walk, but I work on it every day. But I'd be happy to just sit at an art table and create masterpieces, you know?
I hear you.
I don't have to travel all over town.
Good, man.
Yeah, somehow I'm going to come out of this okay.
We hope so. You're at the Dominican?
Yeah, Dominican and Kindred Medical Home.
Kindred, okay.
Kindred.
Bless you, John. It's awfully good to hear from you. I'm relieved. You sound like you're coming through it okay. Take your vitamins. Do your therapy, and we're going to be back real soon, and I hope we see you when we get back.
That's one of my fondest desires. So when do you think you'll be back?
We'll be back for the next show. We'll be around.
Okay.
We'll be in the studio.
I'm going to try the same thing and talk to you next Tuesday.
All right.
Nice.
Well, thanks for calling.
I'm so happy that somebody was kind enough to hook me up to talk to you.
Yeah. Thank you, KSCO. Great people, huh?
Absolutely, yes. And I have a great friend of the lady in the telephone room.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Norma Jean.
Oh, that's right. Thank you, Norma Jean.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah,
that's
we miss her too.
All right,
I'm going to work real hard
to try to
be the first caller next Tuesday.
All right, John. Well, thanks again for calling
in.
Well,
you know what I mean. After you introduce yourself and everything, I'll call around five minutes after. Is that about
Okay, great. Yeah, or between 2:30 and 3 is good, too.
All right, hang in. You're going to love the rest of the show here today, John. You may find you have another excuse to call in even before then. Let's get back to some of the headlines. Keep thinking about the future, and we're looking forward to seeing you real soon.
Thanks for calling.
All right.
Wonderful event.
John Monahan, our favorite, almost famous, getting more famous artist.
All right, man.
Well, I'm getting more famous all the time. Salvador Dali called one of my pieces a psychedelic masterpiece, and that's the truth.
It is.
Looking forward to enjoying my friends and my career.
All right, man. Well, take care. Okay. Thanks for calling.
Okay. All right, back to Santa Cruz. I'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right.
Awesome. Be well.
Thanks,
bye for now.
Oh, I love you, buddy.
Love you too, man.
John. Good
bye-bye.
Call. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go, folks. In case you were wondering, fans of the show out there, what happened to our dear artist, John Monahan, you have a full report.
Okay, now, there's a very interesting report from Peter Diamandis.
There you go. The founder of the XPRIZE, inspirer of many innovations in technology, and a real future builder, Peter Diamandis.
And he did a very interesting piece on email, and he thinks email, as we know it, is broken.
Well, I would have to agree with him. I think email, it's a very big pile of other people's priorities, and it's almost more work than it's worth. You know, it's like finding a needle in a haystack just to find one personal message from somebody who actually knows you.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the main complaints about it. But the thing is today is that we have all these choices of communication. When we want to talk to someone or communicate with someone, do you call? Do you visit? Do you email? Do you text? Do you Skype? Do you use WhatsApp? Snap? Tweet? Facebook messengers, LinkedIn? What do you do?
I would say today I've used at least 4 or 5 of those already, and none of them ever seems adequate in the moment.
Yeah.
Actually, I think Messenger is really one of my favorite ways to connect these days, because you can see from the little green dot who's actually live on the other side of the screen, and you can text them, and if they're not too busy, they'll usually text you back, so it's as close to real time as you can get. You know you're not bothering people, because if they don't feel like talking back to you, they just don't answer.
Right. Well, I think the common wisdom is LinkedIn is for work, Facebook is for friends, Snapchat for close friends, texting something intermediate but not urgent, Twitter for public broadcast, you know, depending on what kind of message you want to do, Skype for long distance, phone calls for something really important.
Yeah.
It's funny how phone calls, the oldest form of communication, has become a priority form of communication.
Well, that's because phone numbers are still somewhat private. You know, so the only people who are authorized to call you are the people who have your number, and typically those numbers aren't that public, and so the people who call you have the number because you gave it to them. And it's not subject to spam in the way that email is.
No.
Yeah.
So, Peter gave us some suggestions that if you want to reach a really busy person, some things to keep in mind. You probably know these things, but just to bring it into the present consciousness. If the email is more than a few lines long, chances are it won't be read. The title, the subject line is really important, because that gets people's attention. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to putting together a good subject line. If it comes in at the wrong time, people are going to ignore it. It's easy to misread someone's intent or emotions through an email. So if it's an emotional thing that you want to do, you might consider the phone or Skype. Some of the basic things is that if it's critical, do it in person. If you can't meet in person, then the next level is Skype. Now, there's a new thing that Peter's...
Or FaceTime.
FaceTime. FaceTime's
pretty
good, too.
Comparable.
And then beyond that, okay. So anyway, it's a very interesting piece that really looks at the etiquette of modern-day communications from Peter Diamantes. The other thing that he mentions is Beam, which is basically where you take an iPhone or an iPad or a tablet of any sort and have it on a robot that walks around and acts like you. And he said he uses it for his company.
This is going to replace email?
Yeah, because you have presence, right? You have a robotic presence. And
a
you
little
see your
droid.
Head. Right.
Okay.
It's pretty cool.
Droid, carry this iPad for me so I can talk to someone in the next room.
It's called Beaming. Yeah, you heard it here, folks. And you can see more and more executives will be using that. Anyway, it looks like we have to go to a break soon, to the top of the hour.
Yes, it's the CBS News, followed by some sponsors. You're listening to the Dr. Future Show, so stay tuned, and we'll be back.
Back after the break.
10, 9, 8. We're going to go take a dip in the lake.
Yeah, so. You think? Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We just got a notice from one of our correspondents. It's from SIGGRAPH, the big special interest group graphics event down in LA. Greg Panos is going to be calling in with a report. This is the place where all the latest and greatest stuff in virtual reality and computer graphics animation happens every year. It's just electric there with the people.
Yeah, it is creativity central.
Yeah.
Right. It's where technology meets art meets movies.
Right, exactly.
The heart of LA.
Just before Gregory calls in, I wanted to mention a couple of robot stories really quickly here. Okay. One is that researchers have developed a robot that can a mother robot that can design, build, and test its own children, and then use the results to improve the performance of the next generation. And it doesn't need any computer simulation or human intervention to do this.
So this is
interesting.
An assembly robot that's considered a mom?
Yeah, this is a robot that improves itself through evolution. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need humans for evolving. Mm-hmm. So it's a big step in being able to create self-evolution of robots.
Okay,
it's research at the University of Cambridge.
So besides reproducing robots, what do these robots do once they're made?
Well, this is an academic project, but they did 5 experiments. The mother designed, built, and tested generations of 10 children using information gathered from one generation to inform the design of the next.
Somehow this reminds me of the cartoon Phineas and Farb, you know, where the evil villain was busy creating new robots all the time.
But you see, you don't need a villain anymore. The robot creates itself. So it basically it does reproduction, assessment, you know, ad infinitum, always improving itself.
The mother robot's name is probably what, Jeff Bezos?
Well, I suppose it depends on what seed you start with. They each have their own unique genome and combinations of genomes as they evolve. As in nature, the evolution of the robots takes place through mutations where components of one gene are modified or single genes are added or deleted and crossover when a new gene is formed by merging genes from two people. So, you know, it follows natural selection. Very interesting, huh? Okay, good. Anyway, I thought I'd mention that to you folks. And also, there is a big debate right now on whether or not we should marry robots or not, whether or not you're allowed to marry robots.
I don't know if this is really a debate, Al.
No? Okay. All right. We'll table that another show. Let's talk to Gregory about Seagraph and virtual reality.
All right.
Hey,
welcome to the Big Piano.
Hey, Greg.
Hi.
Thanks for being on the show. Hey, yeah. We hear you've been at Seagraph. Wow, that's exciting, man.
Yeah, it was really a lot of fun this year.
Yeah, did you chair a session there this year?
Yeah, I put together a session with a friend down here, Jackie Morey, called Seagraph, the original VR meetup. It was really a lot of fun. I had a bunch of the old-timers that were people that are sending you the link now. We had on the panel, we had Brett Leonard, we had Linda Jacobson, and we had Vincent John Vincent, and Noni De La Pena, and Jackie Morey, and myself.
And wow.
Yeah, it was a good lineup. It was the last panel of the last day on Thursday, and there were two VR panels at Seagraph. One was the first panel of the first day, where Jaron Lanier was on that panel with a few other people, and then I had to get up at, you know, really early to be there at 9 o'clock. But
yeah, I hear you. Yeah,
it was interesting.
So, are you seeing more recognition of the pioneers of virtual reality this year?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, all the old timers that had anything to do with VR are being dragged out from underneath the bed and propped up and celebrated again, one way or another. There's a few people that are making a movie called VR the Movie, which is supposed to be about the sort of early days of VR. And they had a studio near the convention center, and they had people over there all week. They were interviewing them, and I got interviewed the last day, about an hour and a half interview. And they also interviewed a number of other luminaries from the past and some newer people as well. So they're going to be putting that together.
Nice.
Yeah, the session panel went really good. Brett Leonard Skyped in from wherever he's directing a movie with Kevin Spacey. It was kind of cool because he was just this giant character up on the big, big screen on the Skype, and then we were these little heads on the sitting at the desk, you know, to the side.
For the uninitiated, Brett Leonard is a film director. He did The Lawnmower Man.
He's
most famous for that. And he's considered now the silverbacked gorilla of virtual reality because his original visions back in the early 90s are starting to come true now.
Yeah, absolutely. For the first time, they had the VR Village. It was a whole separate area where there are about 20 different VR exhibits that were rotating throughout the week, and you could make appointments to go try them. This was set up by our friend Ed Lance, who's, you know, Burning Man and a dome projection expert, and somebody who's been, you know, helping Seagraph plan events the last couple of years. So he did a really, really wonderful job curating that event and wrangling all the various VR exhibits that were being offered.
Ed's work, he actually was an early designer of planetariums, digital planetariums.
Yeah, and he was on a panel about dome-based projection systems as well. That was an official panel, which was actually pretty good.
I think he installed the planetarium in Oakland, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. He's got a pretty large body of work in planetarium design and development.
Let me ask you, overall, do you think VR is here to stay now? Do you think the second wave is going to the big time?
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone is engaged in some level of experimentation or development in VR now that the technology is available again at an affordable price, and that the resolution and latency and other
technical issues have been improved. It's become a play space for all kinds of artists and storytellers and inventors that we, mm-hmm. you know, it was like that in the past, but it was a very expensive medium. People had limited access to the technology that could perform well enough to actually do anything worth experiencing. But that whole landscape has changed. The smartphone industry has advanced the late level of electronics available, and the cost performances have changed. The costs are low, the performance is high, electronics are widely available, and this has really been a big boon to VR.
Hmm. What did you say would be the most compelling content that you saw at SIGGRAPH this year for VR?
Well, in the past, SIGGRAPH has a session called Real Time Live, and it's in the big, big hall with a big projection screen. And they have a rapid-fire exposition of new technologies that people show throughout the hour and a half for this session. And there were thousands of people in that hall and probably 20 or so various exhibitions that were rapid-fire delivered by the people that created them. And I would say about half of them were VR-related. So the ones that were VR-related were using motion capture hardware, tracking the individuals that were in VR wearing their head-mounted displays in a space that was being tracked. We were watching the computer-generated imagery that these people or these explorers were having broadcast into their helmets on the big screen.
What about virtual worlds? Did you see any compelling virtual worlds, alternate worlds where you could feel like you were there?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, a number of the exhibits in the VR Village had alternate worlds that were very detailed, and you could explore them and travel about. There was one that I think it was the General Electric Medical Group or one of the other medical groups did about traveling into the brain of a musician called Neuro. You started off on a platform, and then the platform sort of moved into the brain a la, you know, Fantastic Voyage-like style. And that was the first I tried, and I took the visor off, and I said, wow, that's great. And then, you know, there were a number of other ones afterwards that I tried. Some games, the Wright Brothers, you know, taking off at Kitty Hawk was one that we tried. The theme was, you know, lots and lots of VR at SIGGRAPH this year. And, the talk that we gave, it was SIGGRAPH, the original VR meetup, was basically a play on the fact that right now, anybody can go to a meetup for VR that's in their area and try on VR and hang out with the people that are doing the developers. That's really where all the action is in that space right now, is in the meetup scene. Back in the day, SIGGRAPH was the conference that you really needed to go to check out VR and see what was really hip and happening in VR.
Oculus Rift? Gregor, do you think Oculus Rift still has the platform that most people will use initially?
Well, they didn't have an exhibit there. I think they focused more on other conferences. Still, there were lots and lots of Oculus Rifts that were being used by the artists and the educators and the engineers that were showing various VR demos of one flavor or another. And they were using the DK1 and the DK2, and there were a few of the new Crystal Coves that are the latest incarnations of the Oculus that were to be found either on the show floor or in private demos or in some of the sessions. So Oculus had a presence for sure.
Yeah. Okay, we're about out of time. Any great parties that you went to at SIGGRAPH? They're usually pretty good.
Pioneers Reception. I got to see some of the old-timers at SIGGRAPH. One of the great things that happened was ILM has started like a virtual reality lab. ILM is the effects group for that does all the Star Wars. And
Very cool.
Yeah.
Virtual reality lab at ILM. Huh.
Yeah, they've got a full immersive cave environment. They're working with tablet-based AR. They're working with visor-based VR. Got some great people, and if you look around online on YouTube, you can find the recent video press release they did showing all the technology and Jurassic Park dinosaurs.
Awesome.
And Star Wars.
Well, listen, we got to have you on again soon to go in more detail. We're out of time right now, but thanks for that brief report. Appreciate
Alrighty,
it,
great.
Greg.
Yeah, all right.
We'll chat with soon, and thanks for the download. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, this is Dr. Future Show. Time for a break.
We'll be right back. Here we go.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Almost end of the first hour. We're out on a remote island in Lac de Saisil, outside of Montreal in the Laurentian Mountains, and you might hear a loon in the background, a Canadian loon on the lake. There you go. That's live, folks.
That's it. These birds live in these waters. They swim, and they fish, and they sing like loons.
Wanted to mention that there has been some interesting new breakthrough in the world of transgenic transplants.
Transgenic now, meaning not human.
Yeah. As many of you know, one of the big issues we have in the medical world today is having sufficient number of transplants for organ transplants. There is always a dramatic shortage of that.
The number of transplants that can actually happen is for a fraction, maybe 1% of the people who are in line waiting for them.
Yeah.
You know, it's really tragic for these people who feel like their life depends on a transplant and there's just none available.
So there are a number of avenues that are being explored in this
arena. It's pure research. This is not real patients that we're talking about here. This is research to benefit these patients.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And there are a number of approaches in the research. One is dealing specifically with printing human cells using the 3D printers.
Right, which we've covered often. The idea of stem cells being utilized to create tissues that
ultimately it's going to go in that direction, because we'll just work with someone's cells directly and print spare parts.
Absolutely, but this article makes pretty clear that really
still
now
primitive.
Is only useful for things that are like skin, things that are two-dimensional.
Yes, and what can work now, say if you need a transplant now, what actually is working or will work really soon? So the update that we have there is from a biotech company that is genetically engineering pigs so that their organs might work in people.
And let me just tell people, transplant research began with the very first successful use of a pig's heart to keep a human being alive. And that research pretty much launched all of the research into organ transplants to save lives. The way that this research is conducted still is often that the animals that they're doing the research with, the organs are outside of the body of, in this case, a baboon that is being tested, right?
Yeah, they kept a pig heart alive in a baboon for 945 days. That's the record so far. And they also reported the longest ever kidney swap between these species, which lasted 136 days. That's between a baboon and a pig heart. And they used organs from pigs that were humanized with the addition of as many as 5 human genes.
Right. And so this, for following on last week's gene splicing article, is some of the use of this CRISPR technology.
Yes, the CRISPR was important in this. And why 5 human genes? Well, it's a strategy to stop organ rejection, because organ rejection is ferocious. When you try to put an animal part in a human body, our body tries to reject it like there's no tomorrow.
Right. I'm going to eat that porcine heart. I'm not going to use it as my own.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the company is called Revivicor. The founder and co-CEO is Martine Rothblatt, who's a known futurist who we have known in the past.
And I read Martine's book, and the reason why Martine is so interested in this is because Martine's own grandmother was kept alive by one of these artificial pig hearts, and it was very influential on Martine's life.
And one of her daughters has an unusually fatal lung condition called pulmonary arterial hypertension. So she has a personal interest in this thing. The transplantation process is called xenotransplantation, and you'll probably hear more of that as it goes on. It'll probably happen before the 3D printer technologies for organ replacement. So there's a very interesting piece that we have on there. I wanted to mention that because I think that you may have some relatives or friends you might want to know about what's going on in that field. That'll bring you up to date.
Okay, so yeah, these links are available on the DrFutureShow.com website on the links page. So if you're interested, that's where you go to look.
Yeah. There's also some really interesting breakthroughs with bionic hearing gadgets.
Bionic hearing gadgets. Okay, so these are kind of fancy hearing aids. Are they $6 million enhancements?
Well, there's startups that are building earbuds that'll let you turn down the volume on, like, crying babies and pump up the bass on live music if you want. You basically can play with reality. You put them in and you can change the sounds in your environment to what you want them to be.
Well, your brain kind of does that anyway,
it
right?
It does, right. That's true.
So this is just...
This enhances what the brain is already doing.
Yeah, it's teaching your auditory tools to cater to your preferences.
Exactly. Uh-huh. It's like the next step beyond just choosing your music, choosing what you want to hear in your environment,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is pretty cool. The companies entering this world, the startups involved with this, consider this part of what is known as the wearables market. The wearables market.
Yeah, because you're wearing earpieces.
Right, uh-huh. right. And we're already wearing earbuds, so why shouldn't they be smarter and more interesting than just playing iPod music?
Yeah, well, we know an awful lot of people who have audio enhancements, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just your typical hearing aid, right? So this is cutting-edge hearing aid, but it's not just amplification.
Not just for hard of hearing, but for
music
enhancing reality. One of the designers, Dr. Kraft, says that reality actually isn't half bad. He says, but if we can enhance it and optimize it a little bit, that could be a really cool thing.
It could be even better. We can make it better than it was before.
He would
faster, stronger.
Well, wouldn't you want one? If you could have something like this that could give you hearing superpowers, enhance conversations that you might want to hear. You know, I think it might be good if you have it for recordings as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you could record an environment and just pull out the sounds that you want to hear later yourself.
Sure.
In those environments.
Sure. Well, you know, I do treasure my sense of hearing. I certainly value how it works now. I hope I don't need too much technology to enjoy it in the future, but I guess it's good for those audiophiles to be able to control it with the buttons, right? Have a few volume controls and equalizer gauges and whatnot.
Plus, you're going to see things like Siri getting better hearing, too. You know, Siri, the computer AI on your iOS devices?
That's true. The Siri who constantly is saying, hello, can I help you?
They have now created Siri so that she can demonstrate a solution to what's known in psychology as the cocktail party problem.
Siri is going to be able to go to a cocktail party and...
And turn into the conversation you want to listen to.
Uh-huh.
That's right. The classic cocktail party issue in psychology is that, say, you're in a nice party and there's a dozen conversations going on at once. And if any of those conversations, somebody mentions your name, you will immediately notice that and pay attention to that party. Now, how are we doing that? Are we actually paying attention to a dozen different cocktail parties or what? You know? So there's a group that has figured out how to create the AI to be able to choose the conversation that you want to listen to.
This sounds like it's right out of Mission Impossible.
It's out of Duke University, actually. It's a study that... It was featured in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences on August 11th. It's a sensing system that can solve an interesting problem that we see every day in our audio universe. What to pay attention to, what to attend to. If you want to know more about that, we have a very nice piece on that in our drfutureshow.com/links page.
Okay, augmented audio.
Yeah.
Okay, well, hey, it's a very interesting time. So many ways to be more fully human through technology. Better living through technology.
Well, at least in that case. In the next hour, though, we're not going to talk so much about... we're going to be talking more about
psychology.
Yeah, we have Dr. Steven Sidaroff in our little tent on the island here.
Yes, the illustrious and esteemed
This mad scientist
doctor.
Island, where we will explore some other very interesting ideas. Dr. Sidaroff has just written a book that we'll be talking about. It's called The Path, 9 Pillars of Resilience and Success. And I'm very curious what he has to say.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Dr. Future Show on KSCO. Come on back after the top of the hour. We'll be back with our special guest.